Blog Talk Radio.
Company with poetry. I hope everyone had a great week so far, and I hope you have a better weekend to follow. I hope everyone's weather is treating them well. Our best goes out to those in Canada, trying to get through all the wildfires and smoke and craziness that goes with that situation. It's been an interesting week. We've actually had smoke in our air here in Pennsylvania due to the fires in Canada, which I thought was kind of amazing because I always think the West is pretty far away. But I hear that the haze has actually made it all the way down to Carolina. So it's kind of amazing. So our best go out to all of you. Hope you all take care. And let's see now. Hello, Rex, and how are you tonight?
Hello.
It's good to have you here. So did you have any of that haze and stuff down there and coming out and smelling like, having it smell like someone's got their fireplace going and all that stuff?
No, just the fire I was burning.
There you go. We could actually smell it burning here. because of the way it's pretty wild. Pretty darn wild. But, so happy Friday. Good to have you here.
Andrew, oh, yes.
Do you have we already have callers. Like, we're just a busy bunch. First off,
cool.
We have Kate. Kate's on the line. So, hello, Katie. Welcome aboard. We've
hello,
to those who don't know who Katie is.
Hello, Katie.
Hello, Mike.
Yes. You keep cracking me up every time. And we have Pam. So, hello, Pam. Welcome to the party. Hope all's
glad
well.
To be here. Hello, Jean. Hello, Rex. And hello, Kate.
Hello, my daughter.
And last but not least, we also have Laurent with us. So hello, Laurent. Welcome to the show. Good to have you.
Hello, the late night crew. How are you doing?
Yeah, that's late night crazies. That's us. Uh-huh. But, oh, my goodness. So let's see now. How's everybody's week been? You have three answers, good, bad, or indifferent. No, I'm only kidding.
Been good.
Good. Rex, how about you? I know I haven't talked to you all week. Well, pretty much all week. It's been a while.
Weather's been nice, so I've been outside planting and replanting and stuff like that.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Well, I'm waiting on my bushel of peaches, just saying. And Kate, how's by you?
I'm fine, Kate? Thank you.
Good.
I'm wonderful. Yes, thank you. Great fun.
Very good.
Although
how's
I just... say that again, love.
What's that?
Go
ahead.
I didn't hear what you said. I'm sorry. What was the question?
I don't know why. I kind of flooded in there and said, "How's your weather been? Your crazy weather."
Well, I can tell you this: it's been sunny, which is absolutely amazing. What's even funnier is that I was reading a book in the garden. I forgot about putting on suntan lotion. So I came in with one half of my face bright red with the sun and the other half my usual pale color. So I looked a complete twat.
Well, I'm like that.
Yeah,
it's like that Star Trek episode. One side black, the other side white, and the other person, the enemy, the other side black, and the other side white. I like that.
That was a great episode.
Simplicity.
Oh, my goodness. There's a lot of great episodes. Yep. I have to agree with that. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So, well, you know, when you turn the other cheek, they just think they're looking at someone else. I like that. Pretty good.
I'm not going out for a week.
Well, you got to go out to get the other side now.
That's right.
Oh, God damn it.
Yeah, all you can do is turn the chair around, face the other way.
That's right.
I'll do that. Thank you.
Yep. And if you run into a seam problem, you just go out and hit it face on. Close your eyes and just let that center fill in.
Yes.
And remember,
end up. Yes.
Only put the lotion on the side that's already been burnt.
Yep. Absolutely.
Oh man, it's going to look so stupid. Well, never mind. It will eventually even out, I'm sure. It will.
Absolutely.
Yep, I agree. And Laurent, what's been happening with you?
frailties of the body. You know, nothing I can deal with potentially, but, you know, every day brings something new, either a toothache or this or that. It's pain in the body.
Yeah. I hear you. I hear you.
I know it's nothing special, but, you know, it's all how I complain too much, I guess.
Nah, I think we all deal with it. You know, we just all deal with it in a different way. That's all. You know, and some days you just want to throw your hands up in the air and well, I can't repeat the words I might say, but, you know, because that would be wrong to do on the radio.
I still put in 8 hours of work, though. I just repent later on.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so what do we got happening today? We got a big board. I think it's big. It looked pretty big. I guess we'll just have to see how far we can get through it. What do you think of that? That's a challenge. I have carryovers from last Friday. I have carryovers from last Sunday. You know, we're just getting carried away, just saying. You know. So I guess we'll start at the top. Let's give it a whirl. And Rex, can I get you to read the first one on the board by Nuna?
Sure.
Let me pick it up. This is called Second Floor by Nuno Cardoso. There we go.
Second Floor by Nuno Cardoso. Most of my life, I've lived in this building, in this town, on this second floor. One day, there was no elevator, so I took the stairs. Step after step, I went upstairs while I read a book. When I realized I was on the third floor, what a wonderful thing. And then, a smile. And boom. And Kate, let's start with you.
Ah, why not? Give everybody a good laugh. Sorry. Well, you know my comments. They're a little bit far left, but never mind. We'll get there. I thought this was brilliant. I mean, when you think of the title, Second Floor, and then you look at the AN, and it's about getting lost in literature, then that is an absolutely perfect brevity to cover that eventuality. You're reading your book, you're lost in your words in the book, and then you end up on a third floor, and a nice surprise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. As usual, very well done, very clever. So thank you for sharing that with us.
All right. Thank you, Kate. And Laurent, how about you?
You lose yourself in the moment of reading and finding yourself beyond your goal in an unexpected place. It can be delightfully disjointing to the mind. You know, it's a pleasant surprise, the pleasure of being lost so thoroughly, and being someplace that you don't normally go. I thought it was a great brevity.
Nice. Thank you very much. Pam, how about you?
Oh, this is definitely a great brevity. First of all, I found it relatable because this used to be me. As a kid, my parents were always telling me to pay attention because I would be walking around with my nose in a book. And one time I actually got left behind at a mall. And they actually left, drove off with my brother and sister, then realized I wasn't in the car, came back and found me in a bookstore reading
a book. Wow.
Yeah. But I also like this because I think it works well as a metaphor for the, for just the whole idea of being so completely like lost in a book, but also the way reading can bring you to new places and new heights. So wonderful, right? And very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I like this piece. It was a great brevity, and it was nicely penned. I liked how he expressed the happiness that can come from being lost in a good book, you know, with or without the stairs, you know what I mean? Walking to the third floor with the book and realizing that you're there, but realizing you got in those extra pages. I mean, that would be me. Or just for having yourself lost into the story itself, pretty much, is a double way of looking at it, I guess. I don't know. But I thought it was really nicely done. So great job, Nuno, and thanks for sharing.
Well said, everybody. I like it for the implications it offers, the inference to the angles that can be drawn from it. The fact that you're so in depth that you actually made it to the third floor, considering you never walked past the second, and that thought with a smile offers up that notion of seeing something new, but also the inference of maybe running into somebody new for the first time. So you can draw a lot of conclusions from this just from the shortness of the piece itself. And
some people take
them,
drugs to do that.
That too.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Getting lost in the book is so much more fun. Absolutely. That would be me. When I was young, I would used to come home. I would buy a book, and I would come home on Friday with it. And my mother said, "Well, I guess that, and we know where you'll be all weekend." And I would find a spot in the house, and I would read until that book was done. And I just didn't, you know, so I could totally get lost in the book. You know, and everybody knew, just don't talk to it. This was before I had kids, you know. It doesn't work that way after you have them. It was great. So I totally love the idea. And hello, Hope Soul, and hello, Stargazer. I'm waving. So for the next piece I'm going to put up is going to be, next piece is going to be Song of Melancholy by Jyoti Prasmatia. I'm going to give that one a read. Hopefully I won't tear it up. The Song of Melancholy by Jyoti Prasmatia. Melancholy, my dearest, thy wine is the sweetest. Make me drunk, maiden fairest, so that the skill writes the greatest. Melancholy, my dearest, thou makest me weep so endless, for the heart that thou been bled unto dryness. But melancholy, my dearest, 'tis best if I be the saddest, for then, my dearest, I will be the merriest. So melancholy, my dearest, haunt me forever, I behest, for when I be the saddest, this quill will be yet the best. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Pam, let's start with you.
All right. Well, this was just a beautiful write. It had a nice flow to it, wonderful imagery. And I really like how it speaks on the thought that when we are at our sadness, that's oftentimes when true creativity, true creativity comes out. And so it's a difficult thing to completely let go of that melancholy, because you know, as a poet, as an artist of any kind, that's oftentimes when you're most creative and deepest and heartfelt work comes out. And I really like this all the way through, but especially that third stanza. But melancholy, my dearest, is best if I be the saddest, for then, my dearest, I will be the merriest. And then leading into the last stanza, the idea that this quill will beget the best is a great ending line for that thought. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurence, how about you?
I enjoyed this a great deal. The emotion is the muse, melancholy, the spur to the quill. I enjoyed the effortless rhyming and word choices in this poem. I would wager it was written with a smile.
Nice. Thank you. Kate, how about you?
Oh, unmute. Oh, I thought it was really, really lovely. Again, I like a repetition. I've always kind of liked that. It links everything so well together.
Mm.
And let's face it, to be perfectly honest, without pain, would there be poetry? Perhaps not. It does. It brings your feelings to the fore. You're thinking, well, I'm a bit fed up, but things could be better. And that, I think, is very, very helpful. And I'm talking rubbish, but bear with me. I've got a point. Yeah. No, I haven't.
Nice.
I liked it very much. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Kate. Jean, you got to read it. How about you?
You know, I like this piece. I like it had a nice rhyme and flow. And, you know, the sense of melancholy really can bring out some of the best and most expressive poetry, because it puts you in touch with that emotion inside of you. It becomes really deep and I don't know. I just find that those moments can really stir a lot of emotion. It can be happy. It can be sad. And because, you know, even though you're melancholy, sometimes you tend to look at the better sides of things. So it really is a very true and well-written poem. I think it is really well said. So nicely done. Nicely done. Thank you, Jyoti, for sharing with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jean. Nicely said. I guess what I said. O muse, thy name is Melancholia. Bless me with your voice. Forever shall I sing your glory. And that exactly rolls into what Jyoti actually expressed. Nicely done.
Nice.
All right, Jean, we're back on.
Nice.
You.
Okay. Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up is called Hatch by Allison Hodges. And who has the pleasure of reading this?
I would be happy
great.
To. No problem.
Allison Hodges. Here we go.
Just bear with me. As usual, I'm catching up. Got it. Moment of triumph when that happens is great. Okay, we have Hats by Allison Hodges. I am quite partial to hats. Hats of all kinds appeal to me. I love my baseball cap that says Goddess in gold glitter across my forehead. I'm just as enamored with my garden hat, a bit tattered with grass stains on the brim, but still excellent shade on a brightly lit day. I've collected my hats from second-hand stores and catalogues. Some are gifts from friends who see a hat that screams Allison. I've accumulated hats till they overflow my closet, sometimes collecting dust, but I still pull them out, wearing each one on special occasions. I love the fedoras and the berets equally. Each has a place in my daily hat routine. Those from the 30s and 40s come in handy for weekly variety. Each hat has its own story to tell, how it came to be, where it was worn, and by whom. Each hat has its own cubbyhole, where it sits and waits in line till my mood is right and the time is perfect. I sing softly into the air till one jumps out, perching itself upon my head, whispering sweet nothings in my ear. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. And Laurent, let's start with you, please.
Yes. Any poem about hats leaves me a little... No, I'm saying this incorrectly. I've never found a hat yet that fits me. So I've never been in love with hats. I've always liked the way they look. And that line, I'm just as enamored with my garden hat, a bit tattered, with grass stains on the brim, but still excellent shade on a brightly lit day. She seems to collect hats for occasions or just to accumulate them. As she says, I've accumulated hats till they overflow my closet, sometimes collecting dust, but I pull them out, wearing each one on special occasions. I think each one suits her mood, the way she might feel on a particular day. Some people collect shoes, some jackets. She collects hats, and I like that, even though I can't find one that fits.
Nice. Thank you very much. Pam, how about you?
I enjoyed this. First of all, it's always fun to learn something about one of our fellow poets. And I like that Allison collects hats. And I tell you, there is something about hats from secondhand stores that are the best, because you find ones that you don't find in the newer stores. I like how she has so many different hats to represent her moods, her personalities, whatever she feels like wearing in the day, she can find a hat that represents her. It's just a wonderful write all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
I thought this is an enjoyable piece. I thought it was an enjoyable tribute to her passion of hats. I thought it was well expressed, and I thought it was a fun piece. Had a lot of lighthearted thoughts that ran through it. So thanks for sharing with us. Absolutely, Allison. It was fun. Nice job.
Thank you, Jean. Mm-hmm. And Kate, mm-hmm. You got to read it. How about you?
That was a pleasure to read. That was just so lovely. I really enjoyed it. I'm partial to hats, too, so I can really – but unfortunately – I can't wear them because my head's too small, and it just goes right down. It goes down and perches on my nose, and I can't see anything because it's over my eyes. So I've got to wear children's hats. That's embarrassing, going into a store and right down to the children's section and picking up hats. All of them have got baubles and glitter on them, so that's not very good. So I really like the idea of having loads and loads of hats that you can put on and enjoy, because it does. It adds a little something to the outfit that you're wearing, if you have that special hat that works so well with it. So yes, well done. And I really think collecting hats is a wonderful thing, Allison.
Nicely said, and I'll agree with that. When you talk about obsession, this is an easy one that doesn't get away from you, although it can if you collect too much. But it's not expensive either. As she walks within the hat where a lot of women would walk in a whole lot of shoes that kind of just sit around doing nothing until that one special occasion that they wear those particular shoes for maybe once in a five-year period. Now, the hats, you wear them every day, so you get to fit yourself into the moment. I like the idea of the simplicity of it, the fact that it offers up a little bit more character. Because people don't stare down at your feet to see what you're wearing, but they will look at your head and see what you got on top of your head. So, nicely done. It runs in a little bit of a turn of phrase that maybe hold a discussion on, and a little bit of fun to be played with. So, well done, Alison. All right, Jane, you're back on here.
Okay. Well, let me see now. Where am I going to go? He's over here, and I'm going to grab the next one, which is going to be. Pam, we're going to put this one up for you. It's called Bed Change. Bed Change Spider by A.R. Mundo. Let me hit the button. There you go.
Thank you, Mrs. Bedchange Spider. I so heard your decree. I knew I had to change them soon, but I put it off, you see. But then I saw how hard you worked and ran to earn your fee. So finally I set to task as your zeal rubbed off on me. You see, I thought myself too tired to do much of anything, but then I tipped a cover back and out of it you spring. Barely further than my nose, your legs pulled at the spread, telling me to swap them out and clean my realm of bed. So up I jump at such a sight, your accosting giving sway, trembling in the chilly night at the words I heard you say. You signed your frown so loud and clear to not put it off a day, so I bundled up the mess of sheets and took them all away. I tease them off each one by one till I'm left with one lone duvet. And there you are, still clinging on, not leaving till you're paid. I spied the crease you ran into and wrapped you all around, dumped the duvet right outside and thumped it on the ground. I'm sorry that you couldn't stay, but you'd quite worn out your welcome, turning those light, last blinks of light into nightmare-bringing bedlam. I'm grateful that my sheets are clean, but wish there'd been another way, or even that can't be helped. Please choose another day. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Jean, we're going to start with you.
I knew you were coming to me. You know why? Because I was in the middle trying to do something. I just knew it. could you come back to me? I'm so sorry. Somebody asked me to do something. Okay.
Kate, we're going to go to you first then.
Did you say Kate?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Good, thank you very much. You're in my deaf ear, I do apologize. Bed chain spider, I cannot think of anything more horrific. Oh my goodness. I mean, come on. Wow, there you have that place that you snuggle up to comfortably at night. It's cozy in the winter. And, you know, it can be quite cool in the summer with a light little cover on you. But then you have a spider. Good grief. That's not acceptable. No. So beautifully written, I have to say, Amy, I loved it. It was so clever. And I had a little grin on my face hearing it. And I can imagine your face when you... and then you took it outside on the ground so it would get rid of it. Oh, I loved it. It was very clever. Thank you so much.
Well said, Katie. Thank you. Laurent, how about you?
Well, Kate, I'm sure that Mrs. Bedchain Spider would be scared to death if you squash her with a heel or a foot. She'd stay well out of your way, so you know, don't worry too much. Mrs. Bedchain Spider, as a beginning of a poem, certainly captures the imagination. It's very, very difficult to wander away from this piece after... after you read it, the line that I saw how hard you worked and ran to earn your fee, as if she wanted to leave the house and be brought outside. I don't know, the ending has kind of a rueful tone to it. you know, a little bit of regret. But and then the last line is welcoming, or even if that can't be helped, please choose another day. Come visit again. Who knows? Either way, a delightful poem. The kind of thing you remember. Simplicity is very sophisticated, and that is a great thing to do when you're writing about a spider.
Nice. Thank you, Laurel. And Pam, you got to read it. What about you?
Yes, I found this so much fun to read. Earlier when I read this to myself, it cracked me up. And I told her, you know, there's nothing like a spider in the bed to offer up some motivation. And that is so suggestive. it's great. The way she approaches the idea with humor and wonderful rhyme and flow, it's just absolutely delightful in the idea of, you know what, thank you so much for your help, spider, but try to stay away if you can, you know. Uh-huh. And, yeah, very fun, very fun. I enjoyed it.
And again, and Jean, how about you?
This was a funny piece. It really was, from beginning to end. I love her use of couplets throughout. I think it was, it was her rhyme and her meter throughout was good. And the tail was great because, I'm not real crazy about spiders either. And, you know, if I were to pull back the covers and find one, like, almost looking me in the eye, I might have an issue with that myself. Where is it? Telling me to swap them out and clean my realm of bed. Swap out them, such a sight, you're crossing, giving sway. Trembling in the chilly night, the words I hear you say. You signed your frown so loud and clear and not put it off a day. So I bundled up the mess of sheets and put them all away. I teased them off each one by one, so I'm left with lone duvet. And there you are, still clinging on, not leaving till you're paid. And I could just read more and more because I just found it to be, had a sing-song quality about it, and I liked it. So thank you so much, Amy. It was a great job, and I enjoyed it very much. Well done.
Absolutely, it was. I like the wry humor in this and the sarcastic look at ourselves because we tend to put things off until something looks us in the face and says, you know what? You done left it too long. And the irony in that is heavy. And that note to that second to last couplet, I'm grateful. That's not the one, the third one. Turning those last blinks of light into nightmare-bringing bedlam. You wake up and you find it. You get a quick fright, but then again, you go back to bed after not doing it. All of a sudden, your mind plays those tricks on you and keeps you up at night because, I put it off again, and now I'm worried. Nicely done, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Okay, I'm almost there. I'm just slow. Okay. Now, LaRonda brings me to you, and I'm going to have you read this piece by Poetic Picasso. And
is it a challenge?
Maybe not so much. This is called The Love That I Dare to Speak. The Love That I Dare to Speak Its Name by Poetic Picasso. So there we go.
There it is. The Love That I Dare to Speak Its Name. There's a natural affection that is the love that I dare to speak its name. It is a love so ambiguous that is spoken about by philosophers, poets, who breathe its essence. It is a great devotion, immeasurable in words and eternal in time, for it transcends the notion of its aesthetic form. A beauty only loyal to those lovers who are its creators and evidence of its creation. It is a love written in the sonnets and versifications of poetry, a virtuous adoration, pure and whole, a lover whose fountain I drink from and who is my sweet nectar. Love is the manifestation of our hearts and lust the yearning of the body. It is not a sin to love or to lust. For love is to seek adventure. For love is written by pages of daring words. It is not unnatural. What I define about the love that I dare to speak its name is enriched with the layers of secrets and truth. This is the love whose name I utter and announce to the world for which I reveal its name. Behold, my lover is the love that I profess and whose love is gentle as the red lips of a rose. It is a special love much more profound than Eros, Philia, Ludus, Agape, or Philosia. Is the love that I dare to speak its name. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, you get first dibs with this one.
That's okay, because I was here this time. I thought this was a wonderful poem by Frank. Really well put together and expressed. I can start right from the first line. There's a natural affection that is the love that I dare to speak its name. It is a love so ambiguous that was spoken about by the philosophers and poets who breathed its essence. It is a great devotion, immeasurable in words and eternal in time, for it transcends the notion of its aesthetic form. A beauty only loyal to those lovers who are its creators and evidence of its creation. It's just wonderfully, wonderfully penned. Line just adds on to the one before it. They don't depend on each other, but it just makes it more dense, you know. And I love that. I love the whole piece. It's just a great job. So thank you, Frank, for sharing with us. I really enjoyed this piece. Nice job.
Nice, thank you, Jean. And Anne, how about you?
Yeah, this is another wonderful Oscar Wilde inspired piece by Frank. And I like how it speaks on the idea that all types of love should not be something to be ashamed of, and that love should be something that you gladly and boldly speak out loud about, a love that's deeper than other loves and declared from the heart. The beautiful and thoughtful rite. But I especially like love is the manifestation of our hearts and lust, the yearning of the body. It is not a sin to love nor to lust. To love is to seek adventure, for love is written by pages of daring lovers. It is not unnatural. What I define about the love and I dare to speak its name is enriched with the layers of secrets and truth. You know, wonderful lines on the layeredness of love and lust and how there's just beautifully natural. So very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And Kate, how about you?
Oh, beautifully written. Really is beautifully. And I like the fact that he's so into Oscar Wilde, because it's lovely to see somebody somebody listening to the mantle of such a great poet and going with it and really enjoying it. I think it's fabulous. I do like it very much. You can actually hear that voice, you know, it's so cool. But it is love, so I'm ambiguous that was spoken about by the philosophers and poets who breathed its essence. I think he did a great job on this. It really is lovely. So mm-hmm. sweet. Yeah, so thank you, Frank, for that. I really enjoyed it.
Nice. Thank you, Kate. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, his Oscar Wilde writings are really good. I don't want to say I enjoy them more than the erotic, but yes, I do. And this is a worthy addition to his written words, long may they be read. And it's such an easy and yet so difficult and nuanced subject, love. I thought he acquitted himself very well.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I think it's simplicity in its ideal and what we do for it. And that declaration which defines its true meaning within one's breast, and that's what Frank's offered up within this voice he's inked across this page for us in that thoughtful style of offering up Oscars talents. So nicely done, Frank. Thank you very much. All right, Jane. We're coming up back to you.
Well, that's going to bring me back to you, Rex. I have one for you. It's A Sense of Balance, Part 16 of the Journey by Dan Buccino.
A Sense of Balance, Part 16 of the Journey. One day I awoke, a new first awakening, senses alive as anything can be, a revelation. The outside world dominates for attention like a remote money starved whorehouse walkthrough. I wish I didn't know, but it's too late. Once I do, perception is a mind trick to numb the preceptor into ignorant comfort, but truth is perception unforgiving. What does one do when the light is too bright and noise unrelenting? I don't know, so I look inward for a peace and a moment just to gather strength. But it was not my senses I opened, it was my mind. And inward me is a city of street vendors grabbing my arm with miracle to cure promise as I walk by. I wonder if I really know me at all. Thirst, hunger, hot, cold, tired, amorous. Ravenous desires clawing for attention that I have learned to let scratch for dead skin cleansing. But first is a panic button in hunger. An open cage door for the monster within. Every second there is a sign, whether it is red or not. Hunger growls as a craving from within. What else does the animal want? I remember the desert where the air stole every drop of moisture from my body as a greedy grift of swindling coins. Thirst is not hunger, as nothing is, as nothing else but itself. Thirst is blood and the craving for more. And when the sky cries, I quench. And I am a phoenix from its tears. Comfort turns to lethargy, and I must move to be comfortable again. Fatigue is a lioness who pardons a gazelle as tired legs tremble. And sleep is the lioness hiding in the bushes the next day, waiting to pounce on the gazelle as it was only a matter of time. Cold and hot seem a child's play toy, as all things shiver and all things burn. But what if they didn't? Then at some point, all things would shiver and all things would burn. There are parts of me I cannot control. What I can is a constant stabbing and a never-ending fight from some ancient argument no man alive remembers. My heart taps on my chest. My lungs wax and wane, faster when it is needed, slower when able. I don't tell them. They just sense it. My body alive on its own. Then, who am I? I close my eyes and block my ear. I am still me. I know where each part is. I understand up and down. Movement cannot fool me. And in stillness, I wait. I am everything. I can experience every sensory input I process. I feel the oneness, the sense of oneness that makes it possible. Mind and body, the universe within, and in the universe around, I stand tall. I do not fall when I am balanced. End poem. All right, Pam, let's start with you.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. You know, I always enjoy Daniel's writing. I have to say, I really think what he needs to do is, since this is part 16, is he needs to create a list where he has all the parts together. I think that would be awesome. I really particularly like this one because I think it's relatable to many people, the idea of how overwhelming the outside world becomes when you're bombarded with sights and sounds and even people's expectations. I really like how this speaks on the idea of finding inner peace and a sense of balance as we navigate ourselves through life. And I really like this all the way through, but especially I remember the desert where the air stole every drop of moisture from my body as a greedy grifter swindling coins. Thirst is not hunger, as nothing is as anything else but itself. Thirst is blood and the craving for more. And when the sky cries, I quench, and I am a phoenix from its tears. Just amazing lines there and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
And intriguing, right, to be sure. I wish I didn't know, but it's too late once I do. Perception is a mind trick to numb the perceptor into ignorant comfort. But truth is perception unforgiving. This is too true. The reality we live in can have the curtains swept away by revealing truth that strips away all the comfort that we felt. But it was not my senses I opened. It was my mind. The journey is long, you know. Doors open and shut all the time, each one offering a different path. How do you achieve stability? How do you choose correctly? Which can be iffy because everyone has something or some way to sell you. Great poem.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Kate, what about you?
Well, I don't know, mate. I'll have a little think. That was a very little think, yes. I think this is great. I especially like the mention of the desert, because that is something I myself would love to feel. I remember the desert where the air stole every drop of moisture from my body as a greedy gust of swindling coin. Thirst is not hunger, as nothing is as anything else but itself. Yeah, that's beautifully written. Really is a lovely poem. And I like the sense of balance. I like that idea. It's really cool. Yeah, really well done, Daniel, and thank you for sharing.
Nice. Thank you, Kate. All right, Jean,
your turn.
Of course you like balance, Kate. I get that.
Yep.
I love this piece by Dan, wonderfully penned and expressed. I thought it's a fine series of poems he has going on. They're all a little different, but, you know, they all do flow together nicely. From my memory, that's saying something, right? I think it was very well done. I had to pick up here, fatigue is a lioness who pardons a gazelle as tired legs tremble. As sleep is the lioness hiding in the bushes the next day, waiting to pounce on the gazelle, as it was only a matter of time. Cold and hot seem a child's play toy, as all things shiver and all things burn. But what if they didn't? Then at some point, all things would shiver and all things would burn. There are parts of me I cannot control. What I can is a constant stabbing and the never-ending fight from some ancient argument no man alive remembers. I thought it was just well done, really well done. And thanks for sharing, Dan. Liked it very much.
Well said. Well said, everybody. Thank you very much. Yeah, I get the note of there's a sensory overload in this, and that thought to the lion, I think, was that note to the two beasts that we hold within us. And the one that comes out is the one that we feed the most. And the whole thing walks around that noted anxiety of keeping a balance between the two, lest one or the other comes out and wreaks havoc. So nicely done, Daniel. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're coming back to you, Jean.
Okay. Yeah. That Eugene. You know he's useless. I don't even know why you say his name. Okay. He's never around when we need him. Ever around in the shame. But I'm going to put the next piece up by Jack Tomsiewicz, and I'm going to give it a read. So this is called Irish Sunshine by Jack Tomsiewicz. Rain is called Irish Sunshine in the Emerald Isle. For a chuckle, a guffaw, all you can do is laugh. If you're pelted with 300 plus days of rain in a year, that rots the malt, that makes the beer, the Irishman's lot. It's all too clear if you ask. They drink whiskey by the pail. The barrel, the keg, it runs down the leg, work pipes. Poised on their slate gray petard, said the Renards. In a flash for voice, we've no Rolls Royce. Makes it men void and all. And so on.
Great reading, Jean. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
You know, I love that first stanza. Rain is called Irish sunshine in the Emerald Isle. I knew it rained a lot in Ireland. I had no idea that you could be pelted with 300 plus days of rain in a year. He bemoans the lot of the malt that makes the beer and calls it the Irishman's lot. But whiskey, that's whiskey by the cask. And I love it runs down the leg for pikers hoist on their sleek gray petard, which is the lot, I guess, of many an older male drinker who can't quite make it. It's the boys' room in time. And the Renard in a fox fur voice with no Rolls Royce, snake-bit men, boys at all, I would assume, goes back and bemoans the poor beer and the rain. I love this little, as he calls it, rain ditty.
Thank you, Rob. And Pam, how about you?
This one definitely made me smile when I read it. It really has delightful lines. It's fun and creative. I love how he just writes about those rainy days that, you know, there's just so many of them. They become this part of life, and you find the warmth and the sunshine through your own good attitude, laughter, and, you know, whiskey doesn't hurt either. That can be a great help on rainy days. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Kate, how about you?
Yes, this was definitely a witty little ditty. I really enjoyed it. I really thought it was cool. And I like that first stanza, like everybody said, was a cracker. It's a cracker. Rain is called Irish sunshine in the Emerald Isle. That's so good. That really is. But if you're pelted with it, 300 plus days of rain in a year, well, your crops would like it. But no, it rots the malt, so that's not any good, see? Terrible. Yeah, I thought it was very clever. I'm not too sure what a poor piker is, but I imagine it's sort of not terribly clever person or something. I don't know. But I love the last stanza, of course I did. In a fox fur voice, we've no Rolls Royce, snake bit men, boys and all. Lovely. Beautifully written. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Jack.
How do you take your whiskey, Kate?
Pardon? Laurent, what did you say, dear?
How do you take your whiskey?
Oh, I take it straight.
Neat. Bravo.
Yes, neat, neat, yeah.
Nice. All right, Jean, how about you? Since you got to read.
Oh, I dropped my whiskey in a beer, sorry.
Oh, no.
You mean the poem. You mean the poem, yes. I thought it was a clever poem, I did, and I thought it was a nice piece by Jack, clever and well-penned. And, you know, thanks for sharing with us tonight. It was a lot of fun. You know, there's a lot to be said there in so few words. So nice work.
Yes, I like it. Be stout in your Guinness, for an Irish car bomb goes a long way. Nicely done, Jen. Thank you very much.
Kate, the next thing on the board is just for you to look at. And I'm going to go find the next poem. Yes, that one's fine.
Got it. Excellent. Thank you.
You got it. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Rumination by Sapphire Rose. Let me drop that into the room. And I have an audio for this.
Oh,
okay, there's that. And there it is.
Self-Rumination by Sapphire Rose. I stand in the dark space where Mama cried many a night. Fingertips traverse over surfaces of broken yesterdays. Painful reveries come away as I trace my hands through the dust of our storied past. Moonlight streams in from a broken window, coaxing the dark out to play as it ascends higher into the sky. The light casts shadows across tattered furniture, and pictures stand frozen in time. They reside on decaying wooden end tables as mice scurry on their way by. This house is a time capsule. Time ceased moving forward when the heart of this place left it so long ago. The chaos is apparent. The shattered glass and blood-splattered walls. I was lucky away to come away with my life all those years ago. I will no longer hide in the shadow of my mother's past. Her ghostly cries haunt these corridors, even though she is alive and well. Aged wallpaper covers holes from fists that flew free, and she carried the weight of his hatred for me. Could she have escaped? I'm not so sure, for the truth is embedded in the very foundation of this place. So as I walk the floorboards of the home that molded me, I realize self-reflection is better than giving myself the third degree. End poem.
Great read, Sapphire. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Laurent, wanted to start with you, please.
Yeah, the implication of what is written about is kind of horrifying to be presented with a scene of blood-spattered walls and holes from fists. As a child, you hear love dying in such a way, but it seems to me to be able to have written this piece in the way that it was written, self-reflection being a better emotion than sadness or melancholia or bitterness. That kind of reflection can bring about healing. I think there had to be a healing of sorts in order to be able to write this beautiful, reflective piece that could have been so sad, horrible, but actually fills me with a little bit of hope.
Hi, thank you very much. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this is a beautiful, heartfelt, and emotive write. She did a wonderful, wonderful read of it. I like how it speaks on the idea of self-reflection and facing your own past and looking at the idea of how the past shaped you, but at the same time, how you have the opportunity for growth and change. I also feel like there's kind of this idea of forgiveness, you know, and understanding as she looks at where she grew up and she looks at how things were for both her and her mother. I really like this all the way through, but especially this house is a time capsule. Time ceased moving forward when the heart of this place left it so long ago. You know, there are just some people who hold life together, who hold a family together, and when they're gone, then that everything just falls apart. So beautiful, right, and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And Kate, how about you?
Oh, yes, this is deep, deep, really well written. And her reading voice was absolutely beautiful. You could feel and hear in both the written words and the way she spoke that this was quite a painful thing. I'm hoping it's fiction and not true. I really do hope that. But I just thought that first stanza was so telling. I stand in the dark space where Mama cried many a night, fingertips traverse over surfaces of broken yesterdays. Painful reveries come away as I trace my hand through the dust of our storied past. That is just a lovely stanza, very good. All the way through, beautifully written. And so thank you for sharing that with us, Sapphire Rose.
Nice. Thank you, Kate. All right, Jean, how about you? You got to unmute first.
You Gene.
I'll know that.
Boy, that came out like
watch it when I watch it. Yeah, I really like the piece. And, you know, in all the days, if I'm running an audio, you can bet your boots I'm probably on you. You got it. Very well done. So much sadness expressed throughout the piece. Many painful thoughts and a reflection. I'm not sure where these quotes come in at the end. I'm not sure if they were just pulled from somewhere else, but they're interesting additions in the author's notes. But excuse me. I've put some lines, if I can remember how to get them here. There we go. This house is a time capsule. Time ceased moving forward when the heart of this place left it not so long ago. The chaos is apparent, with shattered glass and blood-splattered walls. I was lucky to have come away with my life all those years ago. I will no longer hide in the shadow of my mother's past. Her ghostly cries haunt these corridors, even though she's alive and well. Aged wallpaper covers holes from fist to bruised grief, and she carried the weight of this hatred, his hatred for me. Could she have escaped? I'm not so sure, for the truth is embedded in the very foundation of this place. So as I walk the floorboards of the home that molded me, I realized that reflection is better than giving myself the third degree. And I just think it was just really well put together by Sapphire Rose, and I'm sure that it is something that is close to her heart. These are, you can kind of feel that it's real. You feel that pain as real. So on that note, wonderful job, Sapphire Rose, and thanks so much for sharing with us as always. Great job.
Good comments, everybody. Thank you very much. I like the thought, this self-rumination, one thing, yes, and that picture using the, because you definitely get a sense of self-reflection with the hand poking out, but you've got the faded figure lying almost distant in the background, trying to reach out and coach you once more. And the first half of this walk that way of kind of a haunting, a ghost tale of that which still lingers within the mind itself. And then you get to that one little stanza right in the middle, the chaos apparent with shattered glass and blood-splattered wall. I was lucky to have come away with my life all those years ago. Now, that says quite a bit, but it only infers, so it leaves you, the reader, to opine as to what really happened, because even though the haunting still rolls with her mother, she's alive and well. And then the ace wallpaper covers holes and fists that flew free, and she carried the weight of the hatred for me. Could she have escaped? Possibly, but then again, that might have meant running out on her. So then that inevitable, I'm not so sure, for the truth is embedded in the very foundation of this place. The walk in the floorboards is kind of a maybe not just a reminder, but a way of purging that which you might have held all these years past. So the self-reflection, on that note, is better than walking yourself into the third degree of recriminations. So nicely done, Sapphire.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jane, we're back to you.
Okay. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Them and Us by S. Sharp. And, okay. I don't have an audio for this one. I think I have an audio for another one. Laurent, can I get you to read this one?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Them and Us. Mother Earth, her family, bowed towards the faces hiding amongst the clouds. Newly awoken elm trees, arms embracing those lost immortal places, celebrate life, them and us, as spring brings new leaves. Warm spring rains, colored by kisses, human kisses, clouds, birds, earth and sky, them and us, you and I. Floating about, where birds with no wings fly, faces in the clouds, laughter in the trees, life in the art of a painter, poet, a dreamer or child, pinks and purples painted, imagined, screened and just on a spring morning, joined as one under the wild canopy of nature and life, both them and us. And
Nicely, thank you very much, Yaron. And Jean, why don't we start with you, please?
So I thought there was wonderful imagery all through this piece. Each stanza was so very well penned. I started to say, oh, yeah, I'll take that second stanza. And I was like, oh, man, but I like the third one, how it leads in right into that, you know, with the colors. And then I looked and I said, who the hell am I kidding? I like all three of the stanzas, you know. They're all really well done. But, you know, warm spring rains colored by kisses, human kisses, clouds, birds, earth and sky, them and us, you and I, floating about where birds with no wings fly, faces in the clouds, laughter in the trees, life in the eye. I was a painter, a poet, a dreamer, or a child. You know, just right down to the last sentence here, I just thought it was just really wonderfully penned. So thank you, Scott, for sharing with us. Great job all the way through. Really wonderful.
Thank you, Jean. Pam? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a great write done by Scott. Yeah, I really thought it had wonderful imagery and metaphors. I like how it speaks on the beauty of nature, which delights all the senses of the artist and the poet. And I really like this all the way through, but it's that second stanza with the warm spring rain colored by kisses, human kisses, clouds, birds, earth and sky, them and us, you and I. You know, that whole stanza there just really grabs my attention and makes me think of the beauty of and renewal of love and life. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Kate, how about you?
Well, I like that second stanza. I thought it was clever. But then you have that last one. Oh, really good. Of a painter, a poet, a dreamer or child, pinks and purples, painted, imagined, screamed, and shushed. On a spring morning, joined as one under the wild canopy of nature and life, both them and us. I do like that concept of both them and us. It's great to see the whole of Earth coming together, both them and us. I thought it was wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing.
Nice. Thank you, Kate. And Laurent, you got to read it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful poem, but like Kate, I was drawn to that last stanza because he marries the emotion to the individual, painting to a painter, imagined to a poet, screamed to a dreamer, stretched to a child. So he captures all those people at different stages. And what I really like is the fact that obviously there's another person in this, and he never mentions it, or that person accepts what he says, both them and us. Now, I don't know if he's referring to everybody or just two. Personally, I'm seeing two. Great piece.
Nice. Thank you very much, everybody. He's got two things in here, them and us. So I thought of Pink Floyd, us and them, and then you and I had me thinking of Yes's and You and I, because there was a line in that song that really works well with this. And you and I climbed over the sea to the valley. A nice touch in that, because he hits on the idea of birds with no wings flying, face in the clouds, laughter in trees, laugh in the eye of a painter, a poet, dreamer, a child, pinks and purples painted, imagined, screened, and shushed. The idea of seeing beyond the moment, actually getting that down and divinity. So nicely done, Scott. For Jane, we're back to you.
Okay. Pam, I'm going to ask you to read the next one for me. And this is called The Blue Chest of Glory by Irish Rose.
All right. It was there that I found your lost thoughts and notes scrawled in lead pencils, stuffed in that blue chest of drawers in the house corner across the rickety floor. It was musty dark, smelling of old thing thoughts from lives lived so long ago. I saw the turn of the century flash before my eyes. A Navajo rug from your ma spoke volumes to my heart about a Colorado soddy home I read in your notes. It brought me flashing back about your life lived in the Rocky Mountain skies on the homestead your dad had. I still see you sitting on your horse looking fine in that brown Kim type photo. Only I have you were a real cowboy, bigger than life. Now I write poetry on an iPad. I'll bet you wonder what the hell that thing is. I hear you now just a-talking to me about how times change and you used to bees. Ain't got no pencil on paper and ain't got no ink, but the damn thing can think. I hear you speak as I'm frozen in that moment. Your voice is talking only to me. Where would I begin to tell you about the change in how folks work and think, how there's no real need for paper, pencils, and ink except for hard proof that something was original truth, except now there's always fraudulent fakes, and I know that you'd say, to hell with those damn things, I'll do it my way, and that's just what you did, because it was real as you. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Kate, why don't we start with you, please?
Oh, yes, this is a nice reminiscence, isn't it? I like that. Looking back on memories. I know that people say looking back, you kind of get rid of the last year things and think only of the good things. And that's the way it should be. You should be able to look back on your prior life and not feel hurt. I liked it. It was musky dark, smelling of old things thought from lives lived so long ago. Saw the turn of the century flash before my eyes. A Navajo rug from your ma. I thought it was lovely, lovely ode to great granddad and the memories. I thought it was brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing.
Nice. Thank you, Kate. Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought it was a great write. I love the vernacular used in the piece, you know, for the grandfather's, you know, dialect, that kind of way of speaking. I also thought it was very detailed and reminiscent of just the way he was. Now, of course, this is about, you know, what he found in the drawer of the blue dresser. But, you know, whatever was written, I mean, I think that she shared it nicely with all of us. How much truth is in here? I don't know, but you know, there's a backstory piece down at the bottom of it, so I have to assume that there's, you know, a fair amount of truth to it. But just nicely done and nicely pulled together. Yeah, thank you, Sharon.
Thank you, Jean. Laurent, how about you?
I saw the turn of the century flash before my eyes. A Navajo rug from your ma spoke volumes to my heart about a Colorado soddy home I read in your notes. It brought me flashing back about your life, lived in the Rocky Mountain skies. Folks who have passed on live again in the words of sons and daughters, and in this case, great-granddaughter. It's a very moving portrayal of a man who meant a lot to you, or a lot to the author who you love for his independence, his orneriness, an iconic man who did it his way. It's very natural writing, and it's well-suited to the story of love and respect. And when she describes that Colorado soddy home lived in the Rocky Mountain skies, it brings such an image of how hard life must have been and how stiff-backed and unyielding in times of stress you had to be to conquer Mother Nature and carve out a living. It's I thought it was beautifully written.
Thank you, Laurent. Pam, how about you?
I like this as a wonderful, heartfelt tribute to her great-grandfather. And I like how she used the dialect, the changing dialect to represent his voice. I also just liked how this spoke on on reminiscing and looking at memories that we hold dear, but also on the idea of stories passed from one generation to the next, so that family history is remembered. So wonderful write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, everybody. I'm going to do this a little different. The opening stanza, she enters as herself, rummaging through a chest of drawers, and she comes across a number of things that remind her and that Navajo wrote from your ma. And then that second stanza, clear through, looking halfway, she rolls into, she morphs actually into her grandfather, so to speak, rolling as if she was there with him at that point in time. Let's see, where is it? On the homestead your dad had, I still see you setting on your horse looking fine in that brown tintype photo only I had. You were a real cowboy, bigger than life. A note of being kind of almost the little girl in the moment right then and there. And then she runs right back into today on that next stanza, now write poetry on an iPad, offering up thoughts of how he would view this type of thing. And then she rolls back into that angle. Now he's talking to her where I begin to tell you about the change in how folks work and think, and there's no real need for paper pencil except the hard proof, the original truth, and to hell with those damn things, I'll do it my way. And the angle of notation, there's nice vivid thought in the moment, walking between two angles and kind of put yourself in the moment, being there when things were a little simpler, a little rougher, but also it proved the worth of those who worked the land and actually shaped things for themselves. So nicely done. I like that. Thank you, Irish. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Gotcha. Okay. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Bereft by Weaver of Dreams. I have an audio for that one. So let me play that for us.
Well, here you go.
You calling a hoe? Watch it, buddy. Watch it. There we go.
I was going to say that. Wow.
Some may think they know what it is to feel alone, to hear no voices, see no well-known faces, to never touch another's skin. That might last a month or so, but to be constantly thus breaks body and mind. Think thee then of my years alone, from child to woman, left, bereft, the arid depth of a loveless life, trodden fitful dreams of more, deprived of a mouth to kiss, a body to caress and hold. My mind changed from need to hatred, all from the closing of a door. The only one I thought might understand stabbed my heart with a look of pity, as if for a crippled horse that should be put out of its misery. Perhaps justly so.
Great read, Kate. Thank you for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Jean, we're going to start with you.
Yeah, you knew I was on mute. That's why you did it. Kate, I thought this was really well done. the lines throughout. Some may think they know what it is to feel alone. You hear no voices, see no well-known faces. You never touch another's skin. That might last a month or so, but to be constantly thus breaks body and mind. How true, how true. The isolated is just, a horrible, horrible way, just a horrible way, you know, to be so alone. And so I think that you got that nailed right there. But the rest of it is just so well put together, really. I liked it. I liked it very much. So I wish I could kind of like wander through and just read the rest of it again. Why not, right? But yeah, definitely, it's the truth. When you're alone, you know, it does break you. And the ending of this, you know, it's sad. You know, the one I thought might understand stabbed my heart with a look of pity, as if for a crippled horse that should be put out of its misery. Perhaps justly so. kind of does that when you get into that mindset, you start thinking, like, maybe this is the way it's supposed to be. Maybe I deserve it. So I thought it was just nicely done. Great job.
Thank you, my dear.
Nice. And Laurent, how about you?
Faith pulls at our heartstrings, you know, their choice of words, which communicates that concept of aloneness really beautifully. Think then of my years alone, from child to woman left bereft, the arid depth of a loveless life, brought in fitful dreams of more, deprived of a mouth to kiss, a body to caress. Powerful words, elegantly put. But what takes the cake is, the only one I thought might understand stabbed my heart with a look of pity as if first it should be put out of its misery. But in other words, perhaps justly so, pressing doubt that she should even continue to exist at this point because of everything that she's been deprived of. But people who are empathic and sensitive, when they are given a look of pity instead of a look of love, that can be devastating, completely devastating, because the emotion that you thought was about is absent. It's not there. And a look of pity is it for a crippled horse. Wow. And you ended that beautifully there.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And Pam, how about you?
Oh, this is absolutely beautiful, Kate, and very heartfelt. It's a wonderful dark light on what it feels like to be lost, to feel lost and abandoned by everyone, you know, including the one person that you truly thought would understand, you know, and that ending hits particularly hard. The only one I thought might understand stabbed my heart with a look of pity. It really sends the self-esteem crashing. But I also really like where you say, from child to woman, left bereft, the arid depth of a loveless light, trod in fitful dreams of more. You know, wonderful heartfelt lines, and very well done, Kate.
Oh, thank you, Pat. That's very kind.
I got to start with that picture. It sets the scene, and those two opening lines that you got were a perfect lead-in. Some may think they know what it is to feel alone, to hear no voices, see no well-known faces. Great lead-in, that picture. It kind of epitomizes that note, because it's cloudy. It's the veil is sharp in that moment. But the thought would be the arid depth of a loveless life is another touch you roll into, deprived of. There's a note of betrayal in that, but the thought that really hits hard is the, my mind changed from need to hatred, all from closing the door. The only one I thought might understand stabbed my heart with a look of pity. Now that kind of hits me with the idea of a close friend who throws up that note of betrayal with that look of pitiful thought, considering they would be the one that would actually understand the fullness of the and scope of the whole situation, because maybe they bear the same thoughts, but only to offer up a look of pity. That's heart-wrenching.
Thank you,
Vic. Let's be done there. Okay.
Okay.
Jean, we're coming.
Back
to you.
Okay. Well, how to change this up here, so let me grab this. And the one, I'm going to put your piece up next. So this piece is, just keep pinching. Don't think this is going to read this. You're going to go to sleep now. Just say it. This is called The Mountain Piece by Laurent. Nice try. Wake it up. Don't make us pinch you. You won't like it. Here we go. Whenever you're
okay.
Ready.
And now can see. Clarity births perception, bearing a potent irony that bends minds, twisting closely held realities, freeing you from fantasy, kissing you, the horror of yourself. Unable to travel beyond the small worlds each of us inhabit, who we are to the larger eye of the universe can leave a foul taste in us. A blight on self-worth that darkens all the good, shading the white with splatters of black, each vile blemish indistinguishable, one from the other. Flowers don't need mirrors to know themselves. Evil loves its mirrors, preening and prancing. The guileless stops. Reflections, innocent hypocrites, honest thief, rich pauper, humble arrogance, spiritually faithless, heedless seer. Conclusions, cracked, distorted pieces fall away. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who was the blindest of them all, and now can see. Postscriptum, love is a drumbeat awakening the dead and buried in us, forgiving of our sins, allowing us to breathe again. Fresh air, fresh canvas, new perspectives beneath painting. Using a better educated stroke of the brush than previous. End poem.
Great read, Laurel. Thank you very much. And Kate, why don't you start us off, please?
I certainly will. Excuse me. Yes. I really like love is a drumbeat awakening the dead and buried in us, forgiving of our sins, allowing us to breathe again. Yep. It's a very powerful emotion, and if you have not always thought that you perhaps were cared for as much as you would want to be, that is a lovely feeling to know someone loves you so much. Wait, just give me a second. I'm looking for the one I would... Yes, a blight on self-worth that darkens all the good, shading the white with splatters of black, each vile blemish. Yeah, that's not, yeah, not how you'd want to feel, is it? But I like the fact I now can see. So you've got to that stage where you are aware that you have a fresh canvas to work with, a new perspective. Always good. It's good to be aware of the past as long as you don't let it blight the future. So I thought it was very well done. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this is a beautiful and thoughtful write. I like how it speaks on perception, especially on perception of self, and how sometimes we can look inward and see the true ugliness of humanity reflected in ourselves, but also how it speaks on the idea of forgiveness. And learning to forgive others and learning to forgive yourself. I like where you say flowers don't need mirrors to know themselves. Evil loves its mirrors, preening and prancing. The guileless are shocked, reflections, innocent hypocrites, honest thief, rich pauper, humble arrogance, spiritually faithless, clueless fear. You know, the idea that there's so many different cracked perceptions on who people are supposed to be and who we are supposed to be. You know, wonderful lines all the way through and very well done, Lauren.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Okay. Well, I wrote a comment for this piece, and I don't want to get into, like, the way I did like, something when it expands. But I can say, Lauren, is I thought this was a very well-penned piece, very very deep in thought. And I thought that you did a fine job with this. And how did I end up my comment? Because that's where I'm going to go. Mostly penned and thought-provoking, right? Nicely expressed thoughts, good metaphors, quite some message tucked into it. So I think you did a fine job. And thanks for sharing.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. Well, Ron, I think... It's kind of a slap at one's own largesse. self-reflection, looking at through a psychological angle, because you hit on a lot of things. Ego being a good portion of this, because we all have egos, and sometimes they get in the way to the point where we don't use our minds the way we should. And when we get to the age where we can actually look in that mirror and see all the little cracks, the little scarring notes of who and what we are and what we've done over our lives, we kind of hit on that idea of, yeah, only a clean palate and can offer up a new note to taking that self-reflection and moving in a direction which meets our needs and does not placate our sense of self-worth, but puts us on a road to a new reflection, a new image of self. So I like that note in the back end, fresh air, fresh canvas, new perspectives, a new painting, using a better educated stroke of the brush than previous. That note being the thought that after divining one's own perceptions of self and then looking forward to what needs to be met, that makes you the person you want to be. And we're coming to you, Jean.
I know, is Lauren awake? You awake, Lauren?
Yep. Right here. Just lost in thought.
Don't get lost. I can't go get lost. Nobody else can either. Rex is going to bring me back to you, and this is The Weekend Calls by Cedar Chapman. So, you so kind.
The Weekend Calls by Cedar Chapman. The Weekend Calls. I follow the herd and wait by the elevators with the rest of the sleepwalkers. My eyes have collected several pounds of shadows from fluorescent lights in the saggy bags beneath them. I saw a mustard stain on the collar of a lady lining up next to me at the food fair. I wonder who she was meeting. Last week, I ate toasted crispy pork for the first time since I started my vegetarian diet. The crackling saltiness of the skin and hints of fried rice melded harmoniously with the explosion of pig fat that swirled in my palate. It was the perfect blend of the rapture of Chinese New Year lucky money and Asian guilt from low-density lipoprotein. A dead pigeon lay on the sidewalk. It was shriveled. Maggots and crows pecked at it. People casually walked by. This time of year, nature blooms cherry blossoms to remind us of the insignificance of ChatGPT. I took a long breath. Was this what the preacher was referring to in all those Sunday sermons I fell asleep to as a kid? I asked ChatGPT how cherry blossoms made it feel. A couple of weeks ago, I shared a glance with a woman on the subway. She wore a sheer spring dress that showed off her collarbone and just enough cleavage that I begrudgingly persuaded myself not to stare at or I'd go blind. If I see her again, I'm going to marry her. I went to Chinatown to buy steamed buns that had been made the same way for the past 40 years. Down the block, the Golden Harvest Theater was boarded shut with the word Netflix spray-painted on it. I used to watch double features there with my parents. A homeless First Nations man was passed out by the front door. I casually walked by him to purchase steamed buns. When I was 10, I asked my grandpa why he liked scotch and cigars. The putrid smell and taste burned my throat. He told me when I learned to enjoy them, I'd understand all the colors the world has to offer. I now have a collection of fine whiskey and Cuban cigars. Lately, I only see shades of gray. It's amazing the change in body language and tone of conversation when people see a chief executive in front of a title. My best friend is Jimmy. The only thing he ever wanted from me was my Sherwood feather tied hockey stick because he thought he could score more goals with it. I often eat alone in the cafeteria, staring at my iPhone, my imaginary lunch friend, and poem. Rob, why don't we start with you? What'd you think of that?
Jiu-Jitsu, I think, is the form that he mentions in his AN, kind of a running collection of related thoughts together. And I found it absolutely fascinating because each stanza has an imagery and a little message hidden in it. from my eyes I've collected several pounds of shadows from fluorescent lights and the saggy bags beneath them is a wonderful way to start, because just the other day I was looking at my eyes, wondering how in God's name they had gotten those bags beneath them. The mustard stain on the collar of the lady is kind of hangs there by itself. It allows the writer to ask a question. I wonder who she was meeting, giving rise to, you know, another train of thought. When I read about the roasted crispy pork, I realized that about two long blocks away, there is a Chinese restaurant takeout that is still open this time of night, and it is daring me to give them a call at midnight. I don't know. I love the way he arranged all of that together. And then, equally incongruous to the mustard stain on the collar, is the dead pigeon laying on the sidewalk. It kind of connects back to the second stanza. And then he jumps right into cherry blossoms and throws in ChatGPT in this form of AI that you can question. I've been wondering whether or not I should do that. The glance on the subway with a woman who wore that sheer spring dress is delightful, as it's accented by, if I see her again, I'm going to marry her. One of those little thoughts we have when we're confronted with something especially desirable or beautiful, especially when it wears a dress and swishes it. And then back to Chinatown again for the steamed buns. And he doesn't attempt to soften the image of what he sees around him. The theater where he and his parents watch double features shut with the word Netflix sprayed on it. It tells about a different story of technology changing our lives and depriving some people of their livelihood. And the homeless First Nations man is poignant because he introduces him only to walk by him casually to purchase steamed buns, as if it's something that he sees all the time, is used to. And the bit about scotch and cigars, I think, is a real insight into people as they tend to age. He told me, when I learned to enjoy them, I'd understand all the colors the world has to offer. And it just doesn't mean colors, but all the senses that can be turned on, that offer some kind of a stimulus or a pleasure or a displeasure. But then he adds, lately, I only see shades of gray, meaning those colors that he used to enjoy. The collection of fine whiskey and Cuban cigars may not be something that's visited with relish all that frequently anymore. And in part, he blames that chief executive in front of a title which I assume is his, how the body language and tone changes, because it means that he's not a person as much as he is a position, one to be wary around. The call to his best friend Jimmy is a warm reference, I think, to his youth. He jumps from that, he's sitting alone in the cafeteria with his iPhone, his imaginary lunch friend, leaving us feeling sad for a person whose life seems so full, but who is kind of alone and dissatisfied with his life at this stage. Brilliant little piece.
Great comment. Thank you very much. And Pam, how about you?
Oh, this is wonderful. Great storytelling. And I like the imagery and the metaphors and how it's a treat for all the senses. I like how he tells us a story about life that goes back and forth from the present moment to the past, and looks at how we learn from even the smallest experiences. There was a nice dash of humor in this too, you know, especially with, if I see her again, I'll marry her. Great line, very entertaining and very well done.
Nice. Thank you. Kate, how about you?
Hello. Yes, I thought it was brilliant as well, I must admit. It's a sad reflection again on people at our times, that a man who can succeed in his life and get a decent lifestyle or whatever becomes a different person to those around him because he has a title. You know, that that's what that typical. You don't want to piss off annoy the boss. That's all, do you? Yeah, something you don't want to do. So you have to be careful, and people are careful to the point where they just leave him alone. I thought that last was last line. Oh, it was so sad. I often eat alone in the cafeteria, staring at my iPhone, my imaginary lunch friend. So yeah, you be careful what you wish for, because sometimes it's not as good as you might think it would be. I thought it was beautifully written, and I loved the bit about the grandpa, the scotch and his cigars. Definitely an acquired taste as you get older. Yes, I enjoyed it. Thank you so much. It was very clever.
All right. Thank you, Kate. And Jean, how about you?
I thought this was wonderful. There was wonderful imagery and thoughts, really well expressed. Good luck. I had to say, good luck in the contest, because this is, I guess, a new contest. Yeah, I read it 6 days ago. And I think he should do well. You know, he has a great eye for detail. He always does, no matter what he writes. And, yeah, I wanted to thank him for sharing with us. There's so much going on in here, and his great way of moving from place to place in the poem itself. And he keeps it all glued together, and I like that. So great job, and thank you again, Peter, for sharing with us. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jean. I got a roll with Laurent's comment on this. It was grand, and it does walk in that, because you start off with a note up the top, the weekend calls. I follow the herd and wait by the elevators of the rest of the sleepwalkers. My eyes have collected several pounds of shadows from fluorescent lights in the saggy bags beneath them. Then you get the sense of despondency, and then the mustard stain. Something you notice in the moment, and it kind of hints at the drabbiness again. And that thought with the then you get that last week, I ate crispy pork. A note to a little touch of pleasure in the moment, but it's brief, because right after that, you get the dead pigeon, a little touch of, a bit touch more, the drabbiness of life. And then you get cherry blossoms, a little bit of brightness, but you got ChatGPT hooked into that, which brings you right back to the dullness of things and how they reach into you. And then then another little bright moment, a glance of a woman, I'm going to marry her. But then again, he already knows that's never going to happen. It's just a brief interlude. And then that thought with the Chinatown, going for steamed buns, same place for the last 40 years. And then remember, it's the Golden Harvest Theater, now boarded with Netflix sprayed over. The thought of how things of the bright things that we used to have in life are disappearing, they're being packed up and shut forever because they're no longer supposedly needed. He yearns for sociality, but gets nothing really social to begin with except his own loneliness. The thought with the Cuban cigars and whiskey was a nice touch there too, a little bit. But then again, lately, I only see shades of gray. Again, his life is nothing but a shade of gray rolling through day by day, with just a tiny, brief interlude of color, which perks his spirits, but it doesn't last long enough. And then that thought, my best friend is Jimmy, that goes back to childhood, because he wants his Sherwood Featherlight hockey stick because he thought he could score more goals with it. And then that thought, the last line, I eat alone in the cafeteria, has no friends except his iPhone. Back again to that note of drabbiness that comes with forever staring at computer screens and the lot we've driven ourselves into and what we don't have, because that was where we were going in the first place. Nicely done, Sita. Right, Jean, we're coming to you.
Okay. Kate, I'm going to ask you to read the next one. It's called Dreams Within a Dream by Hope Schultz, if you would be so kind.
I would be happy to.
Thank you.
Right, so we have Sakura. Buds of my passion, tightly held in your hands, the hidden petals before they bloom. Keep this part of me always, Never forget what you hold. End poem.
That's, I don't think the end of the poem, is it?
I think so.
No.
Pretty long.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 stanzas.
What am I? I'm looking at Sakura. Is that the wrong one?
Oh,
yeah,
dreams within a dream.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, there you are. That would explain it. Oh,
no.
Dear. Well, I've got, what have I got? Oh, dear. Hang on a second. I told you. Chaos. I have in front of me. Okay. That's Ah, yes. Now I got it. Now it's popped up, for goodness sake. Oh, thank you. Oh, what a beautiful picture. Right. Here we go. I told you. My life is just chaos. Right. 2 a.m., your fight with Zed begins. The wrestling ring, roped in our Cali King bed. You disregard the Sandman's plea. Right hoot hit to the jaw, pow. Portugal's champion reigns supreme. Another drag from clear skin wraps that house dark tobacco. Burning cherry snuffed out. Aluminium bought can of beer holds the ashes of 2 days' worth of carefree smokes. I stroke your arm and ask if you let Cleet take the wheel. Graveyard shift has its toes. Must keep the same schedule, day off or not. You murmur as you lay heavy-headed, salt and peppered, afro-curled hair back against goose down throws. The pup has jogged down the road, potholes filled in with brown sugar, stagnant waters, tower of dishes washed, left to dry on the grey wire rack. Children are tucked into chamomile lavender dreams. Should we roll in fields of passion fruit again, or take these naked feet for a stroll down grey matter memory lane? Ah, do you remember when we first met? Poems caught between teeth, hand-rolled cigarettes, desperado, whiskey and ice, blush of roses, blurting out confessions, oceans drunk, rattlesnakes with their advice, pulling cantaloupe seeds, you and me. Ribcage rises and falls slowly, my whisper rides your exhales, softest of pillow kitten paws, purring the whiskers of Portuguese sailor, sweet sounds to carry him home. As this woman sits, legs stretched out, tablet sitting on thickened Hispanic thighs, one hand patting his chest, the other tapping away at this poem. Beautiful dreams within a dream. End poem.
Great read, Kate. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you got?
All right. Well, first of all, Kate, that was a wonderful read. You know, I think this is such a beautiful write by Hope. I like the nod to Edgar Allan's poem "Dream Within a Dream," great imagery in this. Another drag from clear skin wraps that house with dark tobacco, burning cherry snuffed out, aluminum Bock can of beer holds the ashes of 2 days' worth of carefree smokes. You know, I like how it speaks to me on the idea of spending time in someone's mind, but also just spending those casual days together. I also really like, do you remember when we first met? Poems caught between teeth, hand-rolled cigarettes, desperado, whiskey, and ice. I love the line, poems caught between teeth. I feel like that could be a contest prompt, and how it speaks on when you first meet someone, you want to know everything about them, and oftentimes you find the most about them in their poetry. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Jean, how about you?
This is just great all the way through. I was originally going to grab one stand in, and I was like kind of rethinking it. I think it was very well done by Hope, wonderfully. It's full of detail, and it's full of just great thoughts throughout, and I think that she really told her story beautifully. You know, I like this one. Should we roll in fields of passion fruit again, or take these naked feet for a stroll down gray matter memory lane? Do you remember when we first met? Holmes Club between teeth, hand-rolled cigarettes, desperado, whiskey, and ice, flush of words, blurting out confessions, ocean's throat, battle snakes with their advice, pulling cantaloupe seeds, you and me. I think it was just great stanza. But, you know, there's so much more in all of them. They're just loaded with great descriptions, and, you know, you get the emotions that come with it. So excellent job, Hope, and I hope you'll share with us some more. Hope and hope from here.
Thank you, Jean. Kate, how about you?
Oh, yes, again, a beautifully intimate and well-written poem. I really enjoy Hope's work. It's lovely. And I can understand all of this, because if you do work odd hours, if you work a night shift or a late shift, it's really difficult to get your body back to this is day and this is night, and I get up and I go out. And you know, so it is hard. It knocks you for six. And you do get used to it. People do get used to it, but it is hard. So I like that, the fact that she's asking him to let sleep take the wheel. Graveyard shift has its toll. Yes, it does. And I suppose you should keep to the same schedule. But if you've got a couple of days off, you know, the last thing you want to do is keep that schedule going. You want to fight and get out and, you know, look at things and be in the world. So it's an awful, awkward kind of life. But obviously they're working together and working it out, which I think is great. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kate. And Laurent, how about you?
Not well.
Laurent, you there?
Yep. I thought I could get away with it, but my favorite stanza was the one that contains ribcage rises and falls slowly. My whisper rides your exhales, softest of pillows, kitten falls, purring the whiskers of Portuguese sailor. Sweet sounds to carry him home. I won't read the whole thing. There's a beautiful intimacy that pervades this very touching rite. The poet's thoughts are on the partner lying next to you, and the ink scribing the moments before sleep, and into intertwining memories, as she does so in such detail that it really brings the poem alive. Thoroughly enjoyed.
Absolutely. Both you and Kate hit on that note to infant. I'll go along with that too. That third stanza hits the note really well. I stroked your arm and asked, if you will let sleep take the wheel, graveyard shift has its tolls. Must keep the same schedule, day off or not, you murmur as you lay heavy-headed. There is a note to that, because once you get off that schedule, boy, does it screw you up royally. And the idea of working that midnight angle, you come home, you're still wired, so you're up for hours before you actually go to bed. And that idea of getting back into that note is hard-pressed. But she rolls into that. The last couple of stanzas were really sweet. The sort of rolling fields of passion, the question to a rolling fields of passion again, take these naked feet for a walk down a gray mat of memory lane. And then rolling into that note of beautiful dreams within a dream, writing this piece, tapping it out as she sits on the bed while he's sleeping. So nicely done, Hope. All right, Jane, we're about to tell you.
Yeah, yes, you are. I'm not sure that we can sneak another one in. What do we have? Well, we have 6 minutes. Tell you what, I'm going to put this piece up by Darkened Auras. And Pam, if you would be so kind as to read this. I would appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go. It's called Hello, Dolly by Dark and Dory.
Nightly it crept its way across the lands, through snowy Alps and desert sands, coming to rest inside an ancient tome, cloaked in Latin words, an evil home. It lay dormant for many, many years, from ancient times and hysteric fears. They sought out treasures for its still leaves, through those curious, through swampy reeds. Strange words were spoken quietly aloud, as ominous clouds gathered into a crowd, Loud thunder cracked and lightning struck. Now attached to him, this demon stuck. Possessed he was now with white fog-like eyes. Throughout the night were echoes of his teammates' cries. Screams rang out like a banshee's wail. They thought the curse was just a tall tale. It melded with the mind of this family man and hatched an evil, distorted, and devious plan. Through memories and thoughts it could clearly see Samantha, his wife, his son Bobby, and little girl Bree. Today was Bree's birthday. She was turning 8. Noticed from a calendar mark, the entity led up and led him back in control while it conjured an idea to take over a young soul. The man stopped at a thrift store and saw a doll with long hair. He knew Bree would beg for it if she had been there. So he purchased a life-size doll with blonde locks. She is so lifelike, she walks and talks, it said on the box. When he gave her the doll, as he figured it was a hit, so when Bobby saw it, he threw an absolute fit, thinking it was jealousy. Dad said, now there's no need to scream. How about I take you both for ice cream? Bobby rushed to the car and hopped to the door. Dad watched and looked back. Bree was not there anymore. She took off with her dolly. Why don't you spend time with him? He could use bonding time with his dad, you know, Jim. You're right, Samantha. We'll be off being boys, and you can have the girls' time playing with toys. Jim got in the car and smiled as he left. When he got back, Samantha looked stressed. What is wrong, honey? Where's Bree? I'm right here, Daddy. Say hi, Dolly. The doll blinked its eyes and started to speak. Hello, I'm Dolly. Your future looks bleak. End poem.
Great read, Dan. Thank you very much. And Kate, what do you think?
I like a good cliffhanger. Yes. Wonderful story, right? I really enjoyed it. And the fact that the doll was bought in a thrift shop. That is really scary. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. The strange words were spoken quietly and clouds gathered. And in between all the lightning and the thunder, this demon stuck and he was possessed. I love the with white fog like eyes, because that's what you see, don't you? In films, when they're being possessed, they sort of, their eyes roll and all you see is the white. Very well spotted. I like that so much. And he melded into family life, but obviously he was biding his time. So I thought it was brilliant. And I like, as I say, I like the cliffhanger ending. Cliffhanging ending or whatever. Yes, well done. And thank you so much for sharing that with us. I look forward to more of it.
All right. Thank you, Kate. And Laurent, how about you?
I agree with the cliffhanger. We have demonized dolls to such an extent that all you do is mention a doll in any kind of a horror format or something superstitious or evil, and all of a sudden all kinds of imagery and movies spring to mind. And he hits a lot of those points in here. All of a sudden it melded with the mind of this family man and that's an evil, distorted, and odd, devious plan. The memories and thoughts you can clearly see. Samantha, his wife, his son, Bobby, and his little girl, Bree. We get introduced to the characters with the back story in the first stanzas, still lingering, causing the reader to wonder what in God's name is going to happen. And, of course, the doll happens. Hello, I'm Dolly. Your future looks bleak. Hey, it works. It works nicely.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Pam, what about you?
Oh, I like this. It makes me think of the podcasts I've been listening to lately on possessed dolls. And, ooh, it's just deliciously creepy. Great rhyme and flow. I love also that cliffhanger ending with the hello, I'm Dolly. And really wonderful use of a backstory and bringing all the characters to life. So very well done.
Yes, I'm going to go. This reminds me of a Twilight Zone episode with Telly Savalas and that doll that actually came to life. So I like that thought. And Jean, we're coming back to you since it's the back
end of it. That's it for tonight. That's it. I'm not going to throw another poem on the board. We don't have any time. But Fortune of Fortune tonight is a rerun. So anyone who's interested in listening, it'll be playing at 12:30. And, yes, so I think everyone will enjoy that. And tomorrow we have Exploring at Crisis with Captain B2 and Gray Eyes Smith, followed by Rex and, Rhythm and Rhyme with Rex on Sunday. On Monday, we're the Garden of Enlightenment with Louie Wildbell. Other than that, I don't have a whole lot to say. But thank you, everybody, for calling in and sharing with us tonight, whether it's voice or poem or both or time, always your time. You know, I really appreciate that very much. And hope everyone has a great weekend. And I hope you all have a better better week next week. You know, let's just keep looking for better and better and better and more and more and more and more. Yeah, look for it. Rex, as always, thank you for co-hosting with me. And it was fun. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Pam. Thank you, Laurent. Good night. And I appreciate
good night.
Good night, Dan.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night. Good night, Ellen. Oh, my God. You guys are funny.